Hello and welcome. I'm Greg Martinelli, and this is the Ag Sales Professional Podcast. And the purpose of this podcast is to make you the best salesperson or sales manager possible in agribusiness. Well, today we're joined by in person by Andy Cajun Junkin, who mostly goes by the word by the name Cajun. So welcome, Andy, and welcome to the show.
How are you now?
Great, great. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do with your customers.
Okay, I'm a seventh generation farm boy from a little town called Bob Cajun, Ontario, Canada, and I help stubborn farmers work better together. I'm a seventh generation farm boy. The reason why my farm was successful for seven generations is the fact that we were stubborn.
So, yeah.
The reason why we failed is the fact that we were stubborn.
So you help stubborn farmers. There's no stubborn farmers out there, is there?
I'm sure that none of your listeners would actually know of any stubborn farmers.
No, we've never run across that, trying to sell them something along those lines.
So what I do is I get farm families to stop being stubborn with each other.
Sure.
And start being, especially the successors, if we start being stubborn, the turning bad habits into good habits so the farm will be successful 30 years after.
That's great. And this has been big transitions going on constantly in farming, but there's been a lot lately, and they're tough to do, and I'm preaching to the choir for you, but... So how did you end up getting into this whole situation, and how do people...
Well, I mean, the long story short is the day I left for college, my mother, she showed me the farm financials, and she says, you got 5 years to fix this or else I'm leaving your father.
Oh, wow.
So there's no pressure, right?
And this was a, row crop?
This is a beef operation.
Beef operation,
right,
okay.
On the edge of the Canadian wilderness, basically.
Sure, okay.
And then, basically, I went to college, and... I came back from college and tried to apply what I knew to our beef operation. And the first year, my dad actually plowed down my crops out of jealousy.
Oh, wow.
My uncle made the comment that my crops looked better than his.
Yeah.
And then from there, succession went badly.
Oh, wow.
And so 15 years later, my mom actually left my father. We had a succession plan right to our farm. Hmm. And my dad was there for about 10, 15 minutes. Before he walked out of the house, and my mother went out on the front porch. She said, do not buy any more farming equipment until you got a business plan with your son.
Yeah.
And then dad went to an auction sale and bought a manure spreader and came home with that manure spreader. I guess you could say the shit hit the fan. My parents got divorced.
Oh, wow.
And so I spent my 20s and 30s really trying to get my family and the farm back together.
Sure.
And when I was 35, I said, if we don't got everything in order, I'm going to commit suicide. And I said that as, I didn't mean that, but I found myself on my 35th birthday sitting on a barn beam. And I didn't want to, but who I was as a person was a farmer.
Sure.
And that was the, some people, farming is just a career or a job that's convenient. And for me, it was everything I was.
Absolutely.
And I walked into that barn and I couldn't get out of my head. See, when your parents get divorced over a fight over a manure spreader, you become the guy that everybody goes to have a beer with when they start to have problems working with your dad.
Yeah.
And so I walked in just thinking about myself and my own situation, and I couldn't get out of my head, my friends. And so I walked out of that barn. I've never been back to Bob Cajun since. And my whole deal is to save as many family farms ever since then.
So that's a heck of a story for a mission to start out. And
this is what I live to do.
Absolutely. And you've been doing that for quite some time now.
Yeah.
How long have you been?
I'm 47 now. So yeah, it's been
12, 14 years of helping families. And how exactly, tell us a little bit about how you actually work with them. Are you virtual? Are you on the farm? Are you a combination of both, or how does it?
At one time, I used to go out to the farm and used to go pet the dog and have lunch. But what I actually found was I started helping, I started getting calls from all across North America, right? Wrote a little bit for Progressive Dairyman for the last,
I
don't know, 10 years. And started getting calls from across North America. And I was generally being called by accountants and lawyers that screwed up and they couldn't get a deal done with the family.
Yeah.
And I was called in quite often after there's two, three succession planners already been out to the farm.
Right.
And so I started helping some folks over Zoom, it was Skype at that time, because they couldn't afford my services, but they needed help.
Sure.
And I actually was starting to see that they were getting better results.
Gotcha.
And what I found was instead of me going out to the farm and trying to solve all the problems in one day, And, you know, generally I was putting on 70,000 miles on the vehicle a year because I was driving all across North America saving family farms.
Right.
And I started to see that the farms that I helped where I'd meet with them once a week and do it over a half an hour meeting.
Yeah.
We started seeing better results.
Okay.
And so what I focus on is a two-year program. And basically, I never set foot on the farm. I sit down with the family. We make one improvement in how they work together. We make one improvement in how they work together every week. And you make one improvement in everybody's character.
Sure.
But the main focus of the meetings is to improve farm profitability.
Yeah.
So if you can get everybody sitting around the table and brainstorming one way to improve farm profitability,
sure.
It can't cost more than $1,000.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about buying a combine or buying the farm next door, but making simple little improvements to efficiencies.
Yeah.
And you see, the thing is, when young lads come home from agriculture college, like my dad, like when I came home, my dad started seeing the suggestions for improvement as criticism what he was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what led him to plow.
And that's the stubborn farmer concept is, hey, you're not willing to accept that maybe you're not doing it perfectly.
And that's the issue is that what we got to get is a family to stop. Instead of being stubborn with each other, they got to start being stubborn at turning bad habits into good habits. And
sure.
Part of that is to remove the pride and egos and start listening to each other. And what matters is we make the best decisions together as a family.
Well, you got an interesting guarantee that I wanted to kind of throw in here. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, before I get into that, so basically what I do is what before I get into the guarantee is if I can get a family to everybody that comes to the table with an idea to improve farm profitability, can't cost more than $1,000, got to give a 300% return on investment.
You sure?
So you got 3-4 partners sitting around the table. Let's say half those ideas aren't good. So if there's 4 partners sitting around the table, everybody throws out an idea. And 2 of those ideas are solid,
right.
And that results in somewhere between $3,000 to $10,000 improvement in efficiency.
Right.
What you're doing is you're teaching each other. You're improving farm profitability, which is great, but more importantly, you're actually learning to listen to each other.
Sure, work together.
And that's the biggest thing that I try to focus on is getting grandpa and dad listening to the 2 sons or daughters,
right,
and listening to their ideas.
Yeah.
And improving their ability to communicate with those ideas. And then, you know, if the grandson suggests an idea, instead of grandpa just crossing his arms and being abrasive to the concept, he's going to be more open to the concept or listening to his grandson's
sure.
ideas, because 2 minutes later he's going to pitch an idea.
Yeah, right.
And what you're doing is getting everybody to listen to each other. And then if it's a dumb idea, then I force grandpa to explain why is it a dumb idea.
Sure. It's not just throw your hands up in the air and not do it.
Well,
it's
a lot of wisdom isn't transferred.
Right.
Right? Grandpa says no, 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 and then 15 years later when grandson gets a hold of that farm, he runs it in the ground because he wants to prove the neighbors wrong or prove grandpa wrong.
Right.
But the thing is, if in that meeting we can get grandpa to explain why we have done it this way for so many years.
Sure.
Half the time it'll be, there'll be some wisdom there.
Right.
And the other half of the time, grandpa will say, you know what, grandson, that's a different way of looking at things. That's actually a better way to do things.
Sure.
And we improve the organizational efficiency.
Right.
And so you gain organizational wisdom. And so it's a win-win, but I think that you need to start focusing on the transfer of wisdom between generations first, before we start talking about the transfer of assets.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that as well. And you know, you go in, a lot of what you talk about is, I call them soft skills. It's not accounting and equipment and grain marketing. It's more about, hey, you got to get along first, which is a soft skill. It's hard. It's the hardest skill. I don't know why we call them soft.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about how you, I mean, your approach, you got to be part accountant, part banker, part everything.
Basically, I've been doing this for about 15 years now. And the thing is that 15 years ago, I used to try to get a succession deal done in a day. But the truth is that 77% of farms do not have a succession plan in place.
Mm-hmm.
And only 64% of farmers actually have a will. And the reason why 77% of the time there's a succession, 99% of farms will at some point in time have somebody come on the farm and they'll claim that they're doing farm succession planning.
Sure.
A lot of times they're just selling life insurance, but
yeah,
that's a whole different deal. But the thing is, 77% of the time, essentially, somebody is leaving that farm and not getting a succession deal done. And right. that's because you have a bunch of stubborn people
yeah.
that aren't used to, they're used to talking over top of each other. If you can't squeeze out an extra 10% profitability out of the operation, you can't squeeze out, you can't talk about where the farm's going to be in 10 years' time.
Right.
And that is the mistake we're making, is that we have a bunch of people that are butting heads and pulling the farm in different directions.
Sure.
And the first thing you got to do is get everybody on the same page and pull in the same direction.
Yeah.
And that starts with problem solving. And so right now in farm families, we're all stubborn. And unfortunately, we have an I'm smarter than you attitude.
Right.
And you got to get rid of that and get farm families to make smarter decisions together first. And then sitting down and do succession planning, that's a 3-hour conversation.
Right.
But, you know, it takes about 2 years.
To get to the other part.
Well, you got to get everybody listening to each other.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're going to be one of the 77% of farms that do not have a succession plan in place.
And it just happens when
Well, you have a bunch of stubborn people sit around the kitchen table and everybody goes to that meeting and they might all get along great.
Yeah.
They might never have had a fight, a big fight in that family ever.
Yeah.
But everybody walks in that kitchen table and everybody, grandpa just thinks it's going to be like carving up a piece of pumpkin pie.
Right.
And what you have is a bunch of cavemen sitting around the kitchen table. And the only thing they see a knife and fork, and they only think that they only know how to use it as a weapon.
Right, right.
And pie guts in everybody's face, or somebody's running down the road with the pie, and there's mob chasing after them. And well, what we have is a bunch of people that don't have skills.
Right.
We need to get good at problem solving first before we take on an emotionally complex issue
of dividing,
like where the farm's going to be in 30
right,
years.
Time. Right. Well, you know, where you see this as the audience that we're speaking with here today, the salesperson who is a hopefully moving themselves into a trusted advisor to the producers, to the farmers, where we run into that is one kid will want to do something and the other kid won't, or the dad will not want to do split application nitrogen and the kid does, and you got to wait until the dad retires, or if even in a feed business. Yeah. I mean, I've seen a feed business where the feed store owner doesn't want to do what his kids want to do, or his kids don't want to do what dad does, and they run into the same scenario.
You've got to fix that first.
Yeah.
And what matters is we got to get over the I'm smarter than you attitude, and the best idea wins.
How do you recommend people in that environment? So I think of trusted advisors being agronomist, nutritionist if they got animals, then a banker, of course, and accountant, probably.
Veterinarian and agronomist.
Veterinarian and agronomist.
I mean, those are the five key trades.
Board of director type
of
role.
Well, essentially, those are the people that are, I mean, my very first client, when I spent a couple of years becoming the expert, at that time I thought I was the expert. I knew how to... Who gets what, how to avoid paying taxes. That was my skill set. Figuring out all that stuff that every succession planner starts off thinking that's what they have to know.
Right.
And my very first client that I didn't have a personal connection with, he actually heard me on a radio station speak. He had a problem that his son, he had already given 30% equity to his 22-year-old son. His son had actually gone to the bank and gotten financing for a barn expansion. They were 60 cow dairy. The son wanted to go to 120 cows.
Yeah.
And dad seen every suggestion that the son had for changing as an insult of what dad had always done.
Yeah. All right.
And it just shook him to the core. And when the son went to the bank, he actually graduated from college at the top of his class. He had actually won an award for having the best business plan.
Sure.
He took that business plan to the bank. And he actually had the bank approve it.
Sure.
And the father thought he was coming to the first meeting, and it actually turned out that it was the fifth time that the son had everything lined up.
Yeah.
Well, some wingnut from Toronto, the big city, called out for some clarification on the loan.
Oh, no.
2 hours before that meeting, and that meeting went south.
I bet.
And
so that's how the dad found out. It was a phone call.
That phone call threw everything off.
Right.
Two men that were best friends 5 years before were worst enemies.
Oh, my.
And the thing is that they had already had a couple succession planners out there, and I got a call because he heard me on the radio station, and they had just had a fight. So I went out to the farm, met with the father that Saturday morning. The son, I met with him over a tailgate, had a beer with him on that afternoon.
Right.
And then Monday morning, we're going to sit down. And this is my first client, mind you. And then on Sunday morning, I was sitting in the Christian Reformed Church in Stratford, Ontario.
Yeah.
And my buddy was having a christening. It was jam-packed full of all the dairy farmers in that county, all the big Dutch dairies. And there's a lot of the large farms were in that room at that time.
Sure.
You couldn't get a seat. And I was stuck in the middle. And my phone went off. I had just gotten an iPhone.
Right.
This is back then, and I didn't know how to use the damn thing. I pulled it out of my pocket, went to hit, turned it off.
Yeah.
It actually went on speakerphone.
Oh, no.
And I threw it back into my jacket.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to be seen with a phone, being
right,
on video
right,
with the phone
right.
that went off.
In church, yeah.
Yeah. And he yelled out his name. He says, this is, and he said his name, and he said, if you don't knock some goddamn sense this asshole son of mine, I've got a rifle and I'm going to use myself and nobody else.
Oh my God.
I guess you could hear it back in the balcony.
Yeah.
Or back at the foyer there. And anyways, I had to go out. That was my very first client.
Wow.
And because everybody seen that I was able to sort out that situation, I became the guy that was called for the high conflict situations. And, you know, cousins of, you know,
sure.
Dutchmen across North America started calling me.
Yeah.
And that's how I got the reputation for turning around the most dire situations.
Right.
And that's where I got the reputation for being sure. able to turn around the toughest situations.
So let's say somebody out there in our audience is calling on farmers. How would they know that a farmer would be a good candidate for your type of service? What would be hey, these are the kind of situations where you help out the most
Well, I mean, my passion, I mean, I have the reputation for turning around the most dire situations. If you mm-hmm. have a stubborn farm family, I'm the guy that people call.
Okay.
But the thing is that I'm really passionate about getting rid of the need for a mediator altogether.
Yeah.
And nobody gets married expecting a divorce, and nobody comes home to farm with their family expecting that there's going to be trouble working with their family.
Yeah, right.
And what I found is a lot of what I do is a lot like marriage counseling.
Yeah.
And I have a reputation for being able to turn around the most dire situations, but I would prefer to meet with a couple just as they get married.
Yeah.
Same thing, just as I have a program called Coming Home to Farm. I do it with a couple state farm bureaus, like Washington State Farm Bureau, where we have a program sure. called Coming Home to Farm. And it's just basically a master class which helps the farm family identify potential landmines as the kid comes home to the farm and joins
right.
the operation. What are the things they could do as far as practical measures so that they can avoid having
a preventative?
How can they go from a parent-child relationship to a professional working partnership?
Sure, sure.
And what I actually found with that program was that 80% of people that actually enrolled in the program were actually in their 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And they already had conflict and issues going on the farm.
Yeah.
And as a mediator, I found that instead of that program actually helped them identify one or two issues that they can solve on that day.
Right.
And help break the logjam.
Yeah.
And what we found is that it actually it was actually 10 times a bit more effective than having a mediator come out to the farm. If the farm family can enroll in a course,
right.
go through a program and identify a couple areas that they can improve on their working partnership, it can help them get reset and reboot their working relationship.
It's kind of like an awareness.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And awareness first that, hey, there's a problem here we should
yeah.
have solved when the kid came home or before
yeah,
he left.
It is what it is, and sure. we just have to not cry over spilt milk.
Right.
But how can we create heaven on earth?
So I saw some of you. You got a website, and
sure.
Let's talk a little about your speaking business. You're doing some speaking,
yeah.
And I think that's a great topic.
Sure.
What would be your primary target audience? So in our listeners out here, they're
sure.
ag sales professionals. So the people that
sure.
have dealers, they have farmer customers, they have dairy farmers, they have annual meetings.
Sure.
What's your typical audience like, and what do you talk about?
Well, I think just go to stubborn.farm and you can actually see okay. My keynote. It's actually on the main webpage.
Stubborn.farm.
Stubborn.farm.
Not dot com, just dot farm. That's cool.
Yeah, www.stubborn.farm. And so 5 years now, you can probably remember. If you see a family that's stubborn, you'll probably remember me.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I have my keynote, and then I actually have 18, like a Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah.
And I have 18 different niche topics that I can spin the wheel. So, you know, nobody wants to go to a farm meeting with their neighbors and say, well, how do you deal with an irrational daughter-in-law?
Yeah, right.
Because right.
They all know the daughter-in-law.
I had one guy actually asked that one time.
Oh,
he looked around, he says, I'm asking for a friend, right?
Yeah, right.
So the thing is, you got to, so what I found is that, and, you know, asking generic questions like fair versus equal at a succession planning meeting, I mean, you just don't get into neat topics. So right. I basically have a spin the wheel so I can do a more of a breakout session.
Yeah.
And get into really, the farmers really love the questions that are asked.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And so I have, it's really entertaining. You never know. Every session is going to be different because
all the different topics and whatever's going on at the time, for sure.
Yeah. A lot of what I deal with, it ranges from business planning to mental health. I mean, there's everything in between. And so
that's exciting for you. And as you're developing now, you've been at it for a while. I shouldn't say developing, but you had it a while. You got 5 books.
Yeah, I do.
And so give us a rundown of your books and what you kind of.
I mean, my latest book is called Bulletproof Your Farm.
Okay.
And if anybody Bulletproof Your Farm. Okay. And if anybody wants to get a free copy, I'll be happy to send them a copy.
Okay.
And the biggest thing is that a lot of salesmen, they choose to, you know, if you want 5 copies of my book, I'll send you 5 copies and you keep it around your truck.
Yeah.
And if you ever come across a situation 2 years from today.
Sure.
Where there's a situation where you can see the family's not working well together.
Right.
You can give that book, put your card inside the book.
Yeah.
And you'll have a lifetime relationship with that family because Absolutely. You're the guy that helped them. You know, you don't have to get into the weeds, but you can steer them in the right direction as far as a different approach to solving the problems. Because there's lots of life insurance salesmen out there. There's not many people that actually care about the family actually still getting together for Christmas on the farm in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to do.
Well, and you and I talked about, you know, the biggest rewards after a career in ag, and I'm not in the end of my career, but I'm after the end of one of them. Yeah. Is the relationships that I had with my customers, and those are the most rewarding. So in your situation, what would you give us a little flavor of some of the most rewarding things that you maybe achieved with a customer and feel like, hey, this is something I'll always look back on and think of as some of my best moments of my career as a transition?
I mean, every week is different. Like last week, literally last week, I was dealing with a farmer that was not going to go to his son's wedding.
Oh, wow.
Right? He was very narcissistic. He only had a corporate, I mean, basically his sons, he had several sons, and he only had a business partnership with them. He didn't have a personal relationship.
Yeah.
And, anyways, I mean, I sorted that out last week. I mean, it goes on week to week as to it really changed people's lives.
Well,
and that's why I do what I do.
I was going to say, bless you for doing this, because I know there's a lot of people who would run from that subject.
Yeah. But I think the thing is that how I deal with farmers I read 2 psychology books or related books or life coaching books a week. Like I'm big on self-education. But the biggest thing is the way I deal with farmers is I'm not Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
Okay, I focus on the numbers. Like I was talking to you earlier. When I have a family meeting, everybody's got to come to the table with an idea to improve farm profitability by at least, can't spend more than $1,000 and it's got to return 300%.
Sure.
And why I focus on the numbers is that the Dr. Phil stuff is a subtle behind the scenes. I get, you know, a narcissistic farmer, for instance, to actually listen to what his grandson's saying.
Sure.
And deal with soft issues by focusing on the numbers, because farmers feel comfortable talking about financials.
Yeah.
They don't feel comfortable talking about their emotions.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I can do it in a way that they feel comfortable, then we'll get traction. And then the biggest thing is that for a lot of farm families, what I found, you were talking earlier about the guarantee. If you can improve the quality of decision-making on a farm,
Right.
You can skyrocket the farm's profitability.
Yeah.
Most of the farms I work with, we almost double their farm profitability. Like, we do percentage points on return on assets.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, like, I guarantee a 300%. Like, you just think about every meeting that I have with them. My bill is $200 an hour. We're improving farm efficiency between $3,000 to $10,000
yeah.
each meeting. But more importantly, what we're doing is getting everybody listening to each other.
Yeah.
So that doing succession planning, it's easy. Right. Because we're actually getting them actually listening to each other. And those soft issues, I mean, each meeting I'm trying to do three things. I'm trying to improve them actually listening to each other by improving the efficiency. And each meeting I'm making one improvement to how they work together. And then one improvement in the successor's character. Right, because either he has a limiting belief that's holding back from his potential, he's got a character flaw, like being passive aggressive or procrastinating.
Sure,
everybody's got character flaws, and if you can take the 5% of the successor's character flaws and turn them into strengths, you've got a really quality successor.
Absolutely. You mentioned the narcissistic. Do you find that being a hot topic lately, or is it one of the tougher?
That
weaknesses to overcome, maybe.
That has been the game changer for me in the last 5 years.
Oh,
it has. It's been always been the limiting factor.
Mm-hmm.
Getting guys to understand farming by nature, you're shaping the world around you,
mm-hmm.
and lawyers and farmers are actually. There's been a scientific study a couple of years ago. A warden. That they had the highest demographic for narcissism, believe it or not.
Which is, explain just a
narcissism real... is basically being only concerned about your perspective and nobody else's.
Yeah.
And your results. And what we need to do is get farm families. If grandpa, in a farm family situation, let's say grandpa, he's like a king of his kingdom.
Sure.
Right. And everybody, he says jump, all his employees say how high.
Yeah. Right.
And you know, too often there's a master-slave relationship that they have their sons and their grandsons or their granddaughters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of getting everybody actually listening to each other and thinking about, I mean, and not just grandpa that tends to be narcissistic. You quite often get successors that are narcissistic as well. And what we need to do is shift everybody's mindset from me to we.
Yeah.
And how are we going to take on the world together, not just what's in it for me. And if you can get everybody taking on the being, it's a matter of switching like teams, sports from playing golf to playing football. Different rule, different whole mindset.
Sure.
And so I have a lot of expertise in dealing with narcissism, and that's been, for me, the biggest barrier. And once I was able to figure that out, most psychologists, you actually look at the trade journals, most even you go to Udemy and look up just for fun, narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
13 videos on how to deal with a narcissist. 13 are recommending you exit the partnership or exit the marriage.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's the standard. And so for me, that's not acceptable because I know myself.
You got
to
handle it.
My dad was narcissistic, and I know what it's like to wake up on Christmas morning alone. And that's just not acceptable to me. So that's been a big passion of mine is how do you work with a narcissist? How do you turn a whole narcissist mindset around in a team environment? And it's a matter of working. There's subtle ways we do it. But we make sure that the farm family never feels that they're dealing with Dr. Phil. They feel that they're dealing with a family friend.
Sure.
Who is just simply there once a month to improve how the family works together. And if you can do that over 24 months and over 24 meetings, you're making one improvement to character, one improvement to how the family works together.
Right.
And over that time, getting the family listening to each other, in the 25th meeting, you can sit down and do succession planning. And it's a two-hour conversation instead of... a 10-year
sure. Well, you got a lot of work cut out for you, and it's good. That's good job security, at least long enough for most people's careers. So.
Oh, I'll be doing this till I'm 80.
Yeah, well, it's good to know you, and I can't wait to see how things take off for you. I think you're going to be doing really well. And so how do people get a hold of you? How do people find out and get a test to see what it's like for you?
Just go to stubborn.farm, I have a master class, and it's I have a master class that you can sign up for. And basically, it's 10 minutes a day over the course of a week.
Okay.
And so you can sign up for the class, even if you're not a farmer, and just be exposed to a lot of very unique concepts. I don't know of anybody else that delivers this content.
Yeah.
And then I'll send you a free book, and also send it to you as a link that you can just click on a text and you can actually listen to it as an audiobook as you're driving around the truck this the afternoon. And then we'll have a call in a couple weeks. And the thing is that if you want 5 or 6 books, I mean, I'm not in the business of selling books. I've got probably 5,000 books out there. If you're able to build a relationship, and you're the successor's biggest issue is being involved in decision making. So if you can help, and what I do is I help get the son and daughter involved in the decision making, so that there's that lifetime relationship that salesman has with the grandson, because you were the guy that brought in the book.
Yeah.
That introduced this guy that actually changed how the family works together.
And yeah,
that guy is
absolutely
involved.
I can't wait to see more of it and get to see how things go for you.
Sure.
Cajun, thanks for stopping by the podcast episode here. Appreciate it.
And you can get a hold of me at stubborn.farm.
Stubborn.farm, absolutely. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Take care of yourself.
I hope today's podcast helped you on your journey to be the best ag sales professional possible. Now, you can always access more blog articles, podcasts, and training opportunities, both virtual and in person, on my website at www.gregmartinelli.net. Thank you, and have a great day.